Imagine you're standing in a maybe a moonlit forest, and suddenly you see hundreds of tiny brilliant lights just dancing around fireflies, flashing.
Oh, yeah, magical.
Or maybe you've seen your own face, like perfectly reflected in a really still, clear pond.
Right.
These moments, they feel like pure magic, but well, they all depend on something we often just take for granted: light.
It's true. It's everywhere.
So what is light, really, at its core? And how does it let us actually see the world around us? From the tiniest firefly to the huge moonlit sky.
That's the big question, isn't it? And that's what we're exploring today. It's kind of a journey into how we perceive everything visually.
And we've got our curious friend, EB, joining us for this exciting deep dive into the magic of light.
Exactly. And our goal here isn't just to, like, read a summary. It's to give you a shortcut to the really important ideas from the chapter. Make sure you get it, quickly and properly.
Absolutely. We're going to unpack five key concepts, and they're not just interesting facts. They really explain why our world looks the way it does.
Okay, what do we got?
So we'll start with the basics: sources of light. Then we'll follow light's amazing straight line journey, rectilinear propagation. Then how it interacts with different stuff, transparent, translucent, and opaque materials.
Right.
After that, we'll look into shadow formation, and finally wrap up with the really cool phenomenon of reflection of light.
Sounds like a great plan. Let's get started.
Okay, so light. It's truly fundamental, isn't it? I mean, think about it. No sunlight, no plants, basically no life as we know it.
It's absolutely essential.
And without artificial lights, well, our world just goes dark after sunset. Plus, it's behind so much tech cameras, fiber optics carrying this very
It
conversation.
really powers so much.
But if you strip it all back, how do we even start to see anything? It seems like it has to begin with where the light actually comes from.
That's the perfect starting point. So we basically classify objects based on whether they make their own light or not. First up, you have luminous objects. These guys are self-illuminating. They produce their own light.
Like the sun.
Exactly. The sun's a massive nuclear fusion reactor, pouring out light and heat. Or think simpler, like a burning candle that's chemical energy turning into light. Electric bulbs, those modern LEDs too, they convert electrical energy. And those fireflies you mentioned, they use something called bioluminescence. It's amazing cold light, very efficient.
It really is incredible. And those LEDs, you mentioned them, they're such a huge leap, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Massively energy efficient compared to old bulbs.
They've totally changed how we light cities, cut down energy use, and even open doors for new things, like in medicine, with really precise light.
Definitely. So that's luminous. What about everything else we see?
Right, the things that don't glow on their own.
Those are non-luminous objects. They don't produce any light themselves. You only see them because light from a luminous source like the sun or a lamp hits them and then bounces off or reflects into your eyes.
So the color of something, like my blue shirt, is just about the light it reflects.
Precisely. Your shirt absorbs most colors, but reflects the blue wavelengths, and that's what your eyes pick up. Most everyday things, chairs, tables, trees, people are non-luminous.
It's funny how some common ideas get this wrong, though, like the moon.
Ah, yes, the moon misconception.
It looks so bright, you'd almost swear it's making its own light.
But it absolutely isn't. The chapter makes that really clear. The moon is a classic non-luminous object. That beautiful moonlight, it's just reflected sunlight.
So if the sun vanished, poof, no moonlight.
Instantly gone. And another thing people often think, shiny means luminous.
Like a mirror.
Exactly. A mirror or a polished spoon isn't making light. It's just incredibly good at reflecting the light that hits it.
Understanding that difference is actually really important, isn't it?
It is. It's not just theory. Think about practical stuff like designing streetlights.
Ah, right. You need the luminous streetlights to shine on the non-luminous roads and buildings so we can see them.
Precisely. It's fundamental for safety and just navigating the world after dark.
Okay, so we know where light comes from. Now, the next big question is, how does it travel? How does it get from A to B?
Good question.
Have you ever noticed, like, sunlight coming through a tiny gap in the curtains? It makes that perfectly straight beam, especially if there's dust hanging in the air.
Oh, yeah, you can really see the path then.
Or like a laser pointer, that incredibly sharp straight line it draws. What's going on there?
Those are perfect examples of a core property of light called rectilinear propagation of light.
Okay, rectilinear propagation sounds technical.
It just means light travels in straight lines. As long as it's moving through a uniform medium like air or water or a vacuum, it goes straight. We draw light rays as straight lines with arrows to show this.
So that simple straight line travel explains why a laser is so precise.
Exactly. And why light through a keyhole makes a sharp shape on the wall. It also explains bigger things. Ever seen those amazing sunbeams through clouds?
Oh yeah, crepuscular rays, right. They look like they're spreading out from the sun.
They do. But actually, those are parallel beams of sunlight. It's perspective, and there's straight line travel that creates that fan effect. Eclipses, too, are powerful proof.
How so?
Well, the moon casting a sharp, straight-edged shadow on Earth during a solar eclipse. That happens because light travels in straight lines from the sun.
Ah, makes sense. And one of the coolest, simplest things that uses this principle has got to be the pinhole camera.
Absolutely brilliant device.
It makes an image, but it has no lens. How does that even work?
It's beautifully simple. You have a dark box, basically, with a tiny little hole, the pinhole. Light rays from an object outside travel in straight lines through that pinhole.
Okay.
Because they're going straight, the rays from the top of the object land on the bottom of the screen inside the box, and rays from the bottom land on the top. They cross over.
So that's why the image is upside down.
Exactly. The image it forms is real. You project it onto that screen inside.
Yep.
But it's inverted, both top to bottom and left to right. So upside down and laterally reversed.
And it's usually smaller too, right? And kind of dim.
Yes. Typically diminished, smaller, and definitely dim, because only a tiny amount of light actually gets through that pinhole.
Yeah.
It's a great safe way to view a solar eclipse, actually project the image onto paper.
Now, I've heard people say light can sort of bend around corners naturally. Is that right?
No, not really. In a uniform medium, light goes straight, period. It can bend, but only under specific circumstances, like when it passes from air into water, that's called refraction, a different phenomenon.
Got it. And it's also important to remember shadows aren't things. They're not made of darkness.
Precisely. A shadow isn't something created by the object. It's the absence of light in the area behind the object, because the object is blocking the light source.
Wow. So this simple idea, light travels straight, explains sharp shadows, laser focus, photography basics, even how our eyes work. Amazing.
It's a foundational concept.
Okay. So light travels straight. Then it hits stuff. What happens then? Why can I see right through my window glass, but I definitely can't see through this wall? Or, you know, those bathroom windows. They let light in, but everything looks fuzzy.
That's the next key piece. It all depends on how different materials interact with that straight traveling light. Does it pass through? Does it get scattered? Or does it get blocked entirely?
And that gives us different types of materials.
Exactly. We classify them into three main types based on this interaction. Mm-hmm. Transparent, translucent, and opaque.
Okay, let's break those down. Transparent first.
Transparent materials let almost all the light pass straight through them without significant scattering. That's why you can see objects clearly on the other side. Think clear glass, pure water, air.
Like looking through them isn't really changing the view much?
Pretty much. The light goes right through.
Okay, then what about those fuzzy bathroom windows?
Ah, those are translucent materials. They let some light pass through, but they scatter it in all different directions as it goes.
Scatter it.
Yeah, bounce it around internally. So light gets through, but the image is blurred or diffused. Frosted glass is a classic example. Tracing paper, wax paper, some thin plastics too.
I see. And the last type, the wall.
That's an opaque material.
Yeah.
Opaque materials don't let any light pass through. The light is either absorbed by the material, usually turning into heat, or it's reflected off the surface.
So wood, metal, brick, stone, thick cardboard.
All opaque. They completely block the light path.
This simple classification, it really dictates so much around us, doesn't it? Like how things are designed.
Absolutely. We use transparent materials for windows and eyeglasses, obviously, for clear vision.
Right.
We use translucent materials for things like lampshades to soften the light, or for that bathroom glass to give privacy while still letting light in.
And opaque for walls, doors, anything you don't want light or sight passing through.
Exactly. Think about food packaging. Sometimes clear plastic, so you see the food. Sometimes opaque foil to protect it. Office partitions, blackout curtains. It's all about controlling light transmission.
Are there any common mix-ups here? Like, does clear always mean transparent?
Good question. Not necessarily. Some materials might look clear, but still scatter light just a tiny bit, making them technically translucent, even if they seem mostly transparent.
Ah, okay.
And also, opaque doesn't mean dark-colored. A bright white wall is completely opaque. It blocks light, but it looks white because it reflects most of the light that hits it.
Right. It's about blocking versus transmitting, not just appearance. That makes sense.
It's all about that interaction.
Okay, understanding opaque materials, the ones that block light, leads us right into our next topic.
Oh.
Shadows.
The natural consequence.
Yeah, everyone's main shadow puppets, right? Or just watch their own shadow stretch out super long late in the afternoon. So scientifically, what is a shadow?
Well, quite simply, a shadow is a region of darkness formed when an opaque object gets in the way of light traveling from a source. It's cast onto a surface behind the object.
And you need certain things for it to happen, right?
You do. Three essential components.
Yeah.
You need a light source, you need an opaque object to block that light, and you need a screen or some surface for the shadow to actually fall onto.
And the shadow itself is always dark. Yeah, even if I use, say, a bright red ball to make the shadow.
Always dark. The color of the object blocking the light is irrelevant to the shadow's color, because the shadow is just the lack of light reaching that area.
But the shape usually looks like the object.
Yes, the shape generally resembles the outline or silhouette of the object, and its size can change quite a bit.
Oh, right, depending on how close the object is to the light or to the screen.
Exactly. Those distances are key. Also, the sharpness depends on the light source. A small, point-like source gives a sharp, dark shadow.
What if the light source is bigger, like the sun or a large lamp?
Good point. With an extended light source, you often get two parts to the shadow. There's the umbra, that's the darkest central part where the light source is completely blocked.
Okay.
And then around it, there might be a lighter, fuzzier area called the penumbra. That's where the light source is only partially blocked.
Ah. Is that like what happens during eclipses?
Precisely. Solar and lunar eclipses are basically giant examples of umbras and penumbras being cast by the moon or Earth onto the other body.
Wow. And just watching your own shadow change length during the day, that's rectilinear propagation and shadow formation right there.
It is. Or think about ancient shadow puppetry, amazing art form, using just light, opaque figures and a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Or sundials, using shadows to tell time.
Are there any myths about shadows we should bust?
Well, we said opaque objects make shadows. Transparent objects generally don't make noticeable ones. But technically, they can cast very faint shadows because they might absorb or scatter a tiny bit of light.
Okay, so not absolutely nothing.
Almost nothing. And also, it's not just that bigger objects always make bigger shadows. The distances play a huge role. You can make a small object cast a huge shadow if it's close to the light source and far from the screen.
Right, it's all relative. It's amazing how much a simple shadow tells us about light and objects. Used in architecture for cooling, in art, everywhere.
Shadows really do shape our world.
Okay. Let's move to our final, really fascinating topic. Remember the start. Seeing your face in a pond, or more likely, your bathroom mirror every morning.
Yes, reflection.
These are everyday examples of the reflection of light. Let's unpack this.
Right, so reflection of light is basically the bouncing back of light rays when they hit a surface. They change direction, but stay in the same medium they came from.
And this bouncing is how we see most things, right? The non-luminous stuff.
Exactly. Light from a source, hits the object, bounces off reflects, and some of that reflected light enters our eyes, allowing us to see the object.
But the type of surface makes a big difference, doesn't it? A mirror reflects differently than, say, this table.
Huge difference. That leads to two main types of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
On very smooth, polished surfaces like mirrors, still water, polished metal, you get regular reflection.
Regular.
Meaning all the parallel light rays hitting the surface bounce off still parallel. And all in the same direction. That's why you see a clear, sharp image.
Okay, makes sense. And the table?
The table surface, even if it feels smooth, is actually rough on a microscopic level.
Mm.
So you get diffuse or irregular reflection. The light rays hitting it scatter, bouncing off in all sorts of different directions.
Ah, so light bounces off, making the table visible, but because it's scattered, you don't see a clear image of yourself in the table.
Precisely. Most objects we see create diffuse reflection. That's what makes them visible from different angles.
Let's talk more about those regular reflectors, specifically plane mirrors, you know, the flat ones we use every day. What are the key features of the image you see in one?
Okay, plane mirror images have some very specific characteristics. First, the image is virtual.
Virtual, meaning not real.
Meaning it appears to be behind the mirror,
yeah.
But you can't project it onto a screen placed back there. Your eye traces the reflected rays back to form the image, but the light doesn't actually converge there.
Got it. What else?
It's erect, meaning it's upright, the same orientation as the object. It's the same size as the object. And it appears to be the same distance behind the mirror as the object is in front of it.
And the tricky one.
It shows lateral inversion.
left and right swapped. Like, if I raise my right hand, my reflection raises its left hand.
Exactly. That's lateral inversion. It's why text looks backwards in a mirror.
Which is why ambulance is written backwards on the front of ambulances.
Perfect practical example.
Yeah.
So drivers see it the correct way around in their rearview mirror.
Clever. And all this bouncing follows a rule, right? A law.
Yes. The fundamental law of reflection. Right. It's got two parts. First, the angle the light ray hits the surface. The angle of incidence equals the angle it bounces off the angle of reflection. Angles measured relative to the normal, an imaginary perpendicular line.
Okay, angle in equals angle out.
Pretty much. And second, the incoming ray, the reflected ray, and that normal line all lie in the same flat plane.
Simple rules, but they enable some amazing things.
They really do. Think about a periscope.
Like in submarines, to see above the water.
Exactly. Or in tanks, it lets you see things that aren't in your direct line of sight. It usually uses two plane mirrors set parallel to each other, but tilted at 45 degrees inside a tube.
How does that work?
Light from the object hits the top mirror, reflects straight down the tube, hits the bottom mirror, and reflects horizontally into your eye. Two reflections.
And the image you see?
It's virtual, erect, and same size, just like a single plane mirror image, but displaced so you can see around obstacles.
Ingenious. And what about the kaleidoscope? That's all about reflection too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. A classic example of multiple reflections. You typically have two or more long plane mirrors joined together at an angle, often 60 degrees, inside a tube.
With little colored bits at the end?
Right. Those little bits of colored glass or plastic get reflected back and forth between the mirrors numerous times, creating those beautiful, intricate, symmetrical patterns you see when you look through.
And the pattern changes when you rotate it because the bits move.
Exactly. The number of images and the pattern complexity depends on the angle between the mirrors. Pure magic from simple reflection.
Just quickly, a common mix-up. Mirrors don't flip things upside down, do they?
No, only left-right reversal, that lateral inversion, not top to bottom. And remember, even though virtual images aren't real in the sense of being projectable, they are what our eyes perceive. They're very real to our vision.
It's clear that reflection is just crucial for seeing non-luminous objects, for mirrors, periscopes, safety. It's fundamental.
Couldn't see the world without it, literally.
So that brings our deep dive into the magic of light full circle. Wow. We started with where light comes from luminous sources.
Mm-hmm.
We followed its incredibly straight path, rectilinear propagation.
Yep.
We saw how it interacts differently with transparent, translucent, and opaque materials.
Which leads to?
Shadows. How they're formed when light is blocked.
Right.
And finally, we looked at reflection, how light bounces back, letting us see things and enabling cool devices like periscopes and kaleidoscopes.
It's amazing how all these concepts are linked, isn't it?
Hmm.
They build on each other to explain how we visually experience reality.
It really is. And understanding this stuff, even at a basic level, it just changes how you appreciate everything, doesn't it? From a simple rainbow.
To the complex technology and energy-saving LED lights that are better for the planet. It really does make you wonder, though.
What's that?
Well, given how much we already know and use about light,
yeah,
how many more, you know, fascinating properties or maybe surprising applications are still out there waiting for us to discover or figure out how to use?
That's a great point. It's amazing to think about the journey of understanding light from, I don't know, ancient people using polished obsidian as mirrors.
Right. Thousands of years ago.
All the way to today's fiber optics, sending information around the world literally at the speed of light. What's next? What new magic will light show us? And how could it change our lives even more?
That's exciting to think about.
Definitely. So we really encourage you as you go about your day to just notice these things. Look at your reflection. Watch how shadows change. Maybe even try making a simple pinhole camera yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Experience that magic of light firsthand.